The Retirement and IRA Show represents the words and views of the show hosts exclusively and should not be construed as investment, legal, or tax advice. All information is believed to be from reliable sources. However, we make no representation as to its completeness or accuracy. All economic and performance information is historical in nature and is not indicative of any future results. Any indices mentioned on the show are unmanaged and cannot be invested in directly. Diversification and asset allocation strategies do not assure profit or protect against loss. Never make any investment or financial decisions based on information offered on this show without first consulting your financial, legal, or tax advisor. Securities offered through Cambridge Investment Research Incorporated, a broker-dealer member FINRA SIPC. Advisory services offered through Cambridge Investment Research Advisors Incorporated, a registered investment advisor. Financial planning services offered through Jim Salner & Associates, LLC, a registered investment advisor. Jim Salner & Associates, LLC, and Cambridge are not affiliated.
On today's show, we discuss QLACs, or Qualified Longevity Annuity Contracts, which are fixed insurance products. QLACs are offered by Jim Salner & Associates, LLC, but are not offered by Cambridge Investment Research Incorporated.
This is the Retirement and IRA Show coming to you from beautiful Northern Colorado. Join us this morning as certified financial planner Jim Salner, as well as Colorado State University finance instructor and certified financial planner Chris Stein, teach you about IRAs, 401ks, annuities, Social Security, pension plans, and estate planning in a fun and enjoyable show. Whether you are listening live in Colorado or streaming from their website or iTunes podcast, Jim and Chris want you to know that they're available to help you plan for your retirement. Just visit their website at jimhelps.com. That's Jim, H-E-L-P-S.com. And click the Meet the Team button on the homepage. Now, here's Jim and Chris with today's show.
On today's show, we are going to get caught up on some listener emails. So we've got several email questions that have come into us, some with multiple parts, dealing with Social Security and other retirement issues. So we're going to get those cleaned up. So we're going to leave that show today simply to get caught up on these questions. So hopefully you'll find some of these interesting. My name is Chris Stein. I'm here with Jim Salner. Just the two of us today. This is a pre-recorded show for those of you listening on the radio or later on our podcast. It's always recorded for the podcast, I guess. There's no such thing as a lot. We're not doing live podcasts.
No, we're not.
You have real trouble with mechanical devices. Here, let me fix Jim's mic so he can speak.
What'd you do to fix it?
Turned it.
Can you hear me?
I can.
You can? Okay.
Yes.
Sorry about that, people. This is live recorded radio, so there's no takes, and I was having mic troubles. For some reason, I get the shoddy equipment constantly, and Chris and whoever our guest is gets the better equipment.
It all starts out equal, and then you touch it, and then it becomes shoddy.
What am I, like that kid in the Subaru commercial?
Something like that, yes.
Have you seen that?
Everything
he touches
actually,
breaks?
That I hadn't realized how closely that resembles your effect on things mechanical, but I know the email question I have that we're going to talk about is Social Security related, but I know you had a couple others. Maybe you can
let people know what topics we'll be covering. There are quite a few email questions here to get to, because for the past few weeks we haven't been getting to them. We do encourage anyone, especially our iTunian listeners from throughout the United States, if you have a question, we like getting them because it gives us something to talk about. We also learn sometimes from the questions. We get just some really unique questions, like the person who was calling on behalf of his mother because her husband had died before getting 40 quarters, even though he worked long enough. We won't get into that whole thing, but we talked about it on the radio show. We all learned something from that case, as well as the Boston University professor who is, I think, the preeminent brain in Social Security learned something from that case as well, if you remember.
Yes, I didn't talk to him directly, but
through
email conversation, he seemed to be surprised by the outcome that they were experiencing, which is the poor woman was not due any Social Security.
From a little own none rule in Social Security. So we do encourage listeners, whether they're Social Security questions, IRA questions, retirement questions, anything like that, feel free to reach out to us. The best way to do it, as all of these people did, they sent me an email directly. You can go to our website as well, jimhelps.com. That's Jim, H-E-L-P-S.com. And there's a contact us button. Or you can just email me directly, jim@jimhelps.com. That's jim@jimhelps.com. Send us your question. And the more information you put in the email, the easier it will be for us to eventually answer it for you. Some questions we're going to answer directly. That doesn't happen all the time. Mostly if they're Social Security questions, those generally get answered correctly. I would hope correctly, but directly. They rhyme. Those two words rhyme, so it gets a little confusing. But Chris is going to lead off with a very interesting Social Security email question that went back and forth between you and this person on a regular basis until we got it all, hopefully, all squared out. I know it could still go a different way, but I think we have it all squared out for him. So if you email us, we may actually reach out to you directly, or you may just get an email from us. We're answering your question on such and such a show. Please listen to that, and then we can answer the questions that way. But today I have five plus you are six. Wow. I highly doubt we're going to get to all six today.
Well, I hope we make a nice dent in it, though.
Yeah, we're going to lead in with yours, and that's because you take the longest, because you're just so...
Well, mine is the longest. See, my email is... I didn't even print the whole thing out, and it's 3 pages long.
I know. That
I printed half of it.
If I tried to answer Chris's, we're going to need 4 shows.
Yeah, exactly.
But you're a lot more pithy than I can be. So Chris is going to lead in with that, and then we're going to get into the remaining five, and any that we don't get into, we'll answer on another show. So that's to our iTunians, to our local Northern Coloradoans. You're probably wondering, why aren't these guys live again? Well, we're not. But we're going to try to go. Do you think you can go live next Saturday? Because Saturday after that is Valentine's Day, and we're not going to work on...
Valentine's Day. Wow.
Wow, that came out of nowhere. Labor Day. How the heck did I mess up Valentine's Day and Labor Day?
You have love on your mind?
Apparently.
I don't know.
But we may be live this coming next Saturday. We don't know. But we did talk...
We'll have a show one way or the other.
Yeah, it'll be a show with a pre-recorded or live.
As we speak, I am available Saturday the 27th.
So tentatively, we may actually be live on that show.
We might, unless we get a better offer.
Something comes in. We wanted to go live this Saturday. I'm going to throw it on my shoulders. I'm actually heading down to Morrison to go to a outdoor social party / event with a... what are you looking at me that way for?
That sounds like a PC term for some type of...
It's a
hippie gathering in the woods.
It's not a gathering of hippies in the woods. We're near Morrison. There's some big lake down there near Morrison. I don't know the lake. I think Blue Lake. Does that ring a bell?
I don't know.
I don't know. There's some big lake down there. I'm going to have to Google it and how to get to it. The Active Athletic Singles of Denver group is meeting there.
What are you doing? Parking their cars?
No. I belong to that group.
Oh, I thought they'd hired you for something.
No, I'm athletic and active and single.
You're not from Denver, though.
Yeah, but they embrace people from all over the metro area. Hmm. And Longmont is technically the northernmost part of the North Metro area.
Oh, they consider that Denver Metro now?
I do.
Oh, you do. Okay.
But I'm going to head down there with a few friends of mine to this event. Mm-hmm. So... that's why I wanted to take today off.
Is it just a day thing, or?
It goes from 10 to 3.
Oh. So you're not camping out and having campfires and
kumbaya
and
all. I've never been.
Stuff.
They do this every year, and I belong to this group. I usually go on a lot of their hikes and things of that nature. So this is their first, every summer they have this summer party and everyone's chatting about it and excited about it. So there's going to be all sorts of events down there to do. But the weather, if you've been looking, we're recording on Wednesday, but everyone's listening to this on Saturday. It's supposed to be kind of cool and maybe even rainy. So I'm not quite sure how that'll be down there because Morrison is getting close to the foothills.
Yep.
So I'm not quite sure what the weather is going to do, if it's going to cooperate or not.
Well, I'm glad you canceled the live show, because if you didn't cancel it, I was going to have to.
Yeah, you told me you weren't going to do it anyways.
Yeah, because my youngest daughter is in her very first equestrian event.
On a horse?
Usually involved with equestrian events, yes, on a horse.
I don't know, like a real horse or a wooden horse?
No, a real horse.
Yeah. No kidding, I didn't know she was into horses.
Mm-hmm. She started about a year ago.
I didn't know you were into horses.
I'm not really into horses. I don't mind horses.
Do you have a horse?
No.
Does she have a horse?
She doesn't have one, but there's one she rides at the place where she goes.
A big full-size horse, or is she on like one of those smaller ones?
She rides kind of both. She rides what's called a pony sometimes, and then she also rides a full-size, and in the show on Saturday, she'll be riding a full-size thoroughbred.
Wow.
So it's pretty big. It's a
very big horse. She's doing that barrel racing thing or anything?
No, it's kind of trotting and galloping and jumping over small objects.
Okay, interesting.
Not huge leaping, but just she's only done it a year.
Well, it's more
she's
than
in
me.
A beginner.
Horses and I don't see eye to eye, so I don't want anything to do with those evil, vile creatures.
Evil? Do you have a bad experience with a horse?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
So
that explains it.
We won't go there.
Okay.
But the whole joke that you, and this is going back years, when you and Amy, remember I was hunting up in Wyoming?
I thought you were riding a mule.
Well, they didn't tell me it was a mule. I thought it was a horse. Only later they told me that was a mule. I can't tell the difference. They look the same. But you and it was either Amy or George were telling me to buy silk underwear, and I wouldn't have a painful you-know-what. So I went out and bought a whole silk set of underwear for men, which was hard to find because they don't really make it. And it did diddly squat to keep me feeling comfortable in that saddle. So I've never
forgiven
you for
that. I think it was mostly avoiding the chafing.
I
the
chafed.
Muscular
I hurt.
Issues.
No. It just, those animals are... With as much better modes of transportation, but I was hunting in the Shoshone National Forest. You couldn't take ATVs with you, so we had to go in on horseback, and it was not a pretty experience.
Muleback for you.
I thought it was a horse. Have you seen the difference? You can't even tell the difference between a mule and a horse. They make the same noise. They go brrrr, and just... I thought I was on a horse. It was only later they told me it was a mule.
Well, they're very sure-footed, and they're good for packing. They're good pack animals.
And they were perfect for me because it was relatively slow. But every once in a while, they get freaked out and just start running and wouldn't stop.
They're usually fleeing from some type of grizzly bear or something like
there's
that.
There's no bear,
it
no
was protecting
nothing.
You.
No, it wasn't. It was a she anyways. And she just liked watching me go down as she was going up. And we'd meet somewhere in the middle. And it wasn't pleasant.
I wish
and
there
the
was,
silk underwear were
wish
not
there
working.
Were, I wish there was video for that.
No, you don't want video of that. It was not a pleasant experience. Now I've learned. No more backcountry hunting for me. Yeah, those days
you only
are
hunt
over.
From the road now,
now
right?
No, not from the road. I go to a nice resort. I sleep very well. Mm-hmm. And then they take me out in the morning and drive me somewhere. And we walk it. Just we. I don't mind hiking 2, 3, 4 miles. I do that all the time. No more horse stuff. And no more sleeping in cold tents with fires and nobody wants to get out and start the fire in the morning and it's snowing and cold. And those days are over. So anyways. Okay.
But you still have the silk underwear, right?
No, I got rid of those. They didn't work.
That didn't come from my mouth, just so you know.
It was either. Was it George or
Amy? I think it was George.
Was it George who was pulling? Yeah.
I'm not sure.
And I bought into that hook, line, and sinker. Okay, so anyways, you can see I'm traumatized by
that. Did
you
wear them on the inside or the outside?
What are you talking about, the inside or the outside?
Well, it probably makes a difference. Maybe you're supposed to wear them on the outside.
Of what?
Your clothes.
Oh, no, they're underwear. But anyways, that was a long time ago. I'm still scarred by this. I'm surprised I can even talk about it without screaming.
I didn't realize it was such a sore subject. I would have brought it up.
Is that a pun?
No,
sore subject?
Well, you can take it as a pun. No, that wasn't my intent.
Okay, so we're going to get to a Social Security question first. Mm-hmm. I'm going to let you handle this whole thing because it is a moving tirade. You guys sent a tremendous
amount.
Not a
tirade.
Not a
tirade. Nobody's angry
just,
in this.
No, no one was angry. So it's just a moving help me out here.
It's an in-depth story.
It's an in-depth story. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to let you try to explain it and how you try to point this person in the right direction with Social Security.
Yeah. So
are you going to read his original question?
No. I'm not going to read it. I'm going to summarize. So we had a podcast listener who emailed in with some questions. Their brother had passed away and wasn't married and had no other direct immediate family other than siblings. And so this brother who was writing to us was asking some questions. It was really a mixed email, which included some estate issues as far as transferring assets that from the decedent, which is the person who's passed away, his brother. And there were some questions about the Social Security that this person was receiving. And it turns out that his brother passed away in November of 2015. And at that point, we'll call George. We'll call the person. So when I talk about George, that's the person who's writing to us. So George, and then George's brother passed away in November of 2015. And there was some issue with Social Security sending them a check, the final check. And just to set the stage here, everyone should know, we've talked about this before, but not in great detail, but when you're receiving Social Security retirement benefits, you are not entitled to benefits in the month that you pass away. So even if you live way to the end of the month, say you live to the 28th or 29th of the month, if you pass away before the month has completed, you're actually not owed that benefit. And if that benefit gets paid to you because Social Security doesn't find out about you passing away in time to stop the deposit or stop the check, they don't really send out checks for the most part anymore. But if they pay that benefit, they're going to claw it back. They're going to require that be paid back. That's not really what happened in this case because George's brother passed away towards the beginning of November, and George notified Social Security very quickly, fast enough that the payment that was due to George's brother in November did not get deposited. Now, you think it would be simple as that, but you also must remember that the Social Security retirement benefits are paid 1 month behind. So the payment that was going to go in for November that got stopped was actually the benefit for October. The reason that matters is George's brother was owed and is due the October payment, but Social Security stopped it. So there was some question as to what happened, and in the original email that he sent us, he talked about how George received in January of 2016 a payment from Social Security and wasn't sure what it was necessarily for, what month it was for, and there was some question as to if it was for a month that George's brother wasn't entitled. Our original assumption was that check was for the November benefit, to which George's brother is not entitled because of what I said before, that he passed away in November, so he's not owed the November benefit, which would normally be paid in December, and the check that was received by George himself in January, we kind of assumed it was that. So I warned him originally that Social Security was going to come looking for that money because George's brother wasn't entitled to that money for November because he passed away before the end of the month. Well, George clarified through our email exchanges that the benefit actually was to be paid in November. What he didn't realize is that was October's benefit. So it is free and clear. It is not something Social Security is going to look back, but the question became, why did it get sent to George instead of just being deposited in the deceased person, George's brother's account?
And why don't we explain why it was the October payment in November? Did you mention arrears?
Yeah.
Oh, I wasn't paying attention. I was reading. So apparently you covered
that. You remind me of some of the students in my class where we talk about something.
As they're doing something else?
As they're doing something else. And then I've moved on to the next topic only to see a little hand raised asking me exactly what we just talked about.
Perfect.
So
just checking.
You'd fit right in.
I could go back to college. I would fit
so,
that part.
So yes, the November payment.
Well, I wasn't
was
paying attention.
October's
I was trying to read
benefit.
Emails.
Very, okay, yeah.
All right.
Okay.
I'll pay attention more.
Okay, thanks.
This is what happens when we record during the day and I'm working.
You're not supposed to be working during the show.
No, but I work during the day. Well, so fine. I have to look at things and work.
Okay.
Okay.
Well, then keep your mouth shut. No more questions from Jim.
We need a recording anyway. Of that that Saturday Night Live woman who would say, never mind. Who is that?
Oh, yeah.
Gilda Radner, was that her?
Yes.
Okay.
That was... I'll see if I can dig that up. Not right now because I'm talking about something. But so the question, you know, we clarified that was for the October benefit, and George's brother who had passed away was due. But then there was this additional information about how did it end up coming to George rather than being deposited in George's brother's account. Well, if George hadn't notified Social Security quite as quickly, that deposit would have gone into George's brother's account. And whoever then had control over that after the brother died would obviously have control over that money, and it would go into their estate, and or maybe if the account had joint ownership by someone, it would be owned by that person. We didn't really get into that because the payment never actually went there. A check was written to George in January of 2016, and that was a result of George contacting Social Security, being notified about this extra payment that was owed, and he then was counseled by Social Security to fill out a form. And this form, it's a claim form for that final payment. That final payment is owed, and Social Security doesn't just keep it. They try to find who that should go to. And they have an order of things. First, they look for a spouse. If there's a spouse, it's owed to them. If there is no spouse, they look for children, and that would go to them if there were any. Then if there were any dependent parents that were attached to George's brother, that would be the next in line. But then after that, it would go to the legal representative. And that was George. So George is the legal representative of his brother's estate. So he had to fill out this form and indicate that there were no spouses, there were no children, there were no dependent parents. And he had to provide documentation showing he was the legal representative, and thus the check was paid to him. So the good news is you won't ever miss out on a check that's on a deposit that's owed to someone who has passed away. But always remember, neither you nor the person who's passed away is owed a benefit for the month in which the person died. Those benefits that would be normally deposited that month are technically from the previous month. So George is going to get a 1099 from Social Security, most likely, for 2016, showing that payment, and he would include that as income. It didn't get paid to George's brother, so they don't 1099 his brother. They 1099'd him for all the payments that were made while he was living. This one last payment, though, gets paid to a different person, whether it was a spouse or a child or a dependent parent. In this case, it went to the legal representative, George. And he should expect to have to report that income on his tax return. So we were able to clarify kind of the story on that, but it brought up several things. The kind of the reminder that payments are, the benefits are paid in arrears, are 1 month behind, and the fact that you aren't owed a benefit in the month that you pass away. The one last thing that came out, the $255 death benefit, not a huge amount, but it's still left over from the 1950s. That $255 one-time lump sum death benefit is paid only to spouses or children. That $255 is not paid out in George's brother's case because he has no spouse nor any children. So that $255 doesn't end up getting paid to George. He's not a spouse or a child.
So if I want to make sure my estate gets that $255, I better run out and get married and or have a kid.
Oh, yeah. And for $255, that's a great trade-off. Right?
I'm sure.
I'm surprised they still pay that $255. People look at that and kind of laugh that isn't going to help much with funeral expenses or anything, which was the original case. But it's just this benefit that has lingered on, that's remained, that nobody's decided to chop off. But they didn't index it for inflation. So when it was set up in the 1950s, at the current amount, it varied in amount prior to that. But since then, it just stayed flat at the $255.
Yeah, and maybe 60 years ago, you could bury someone for $255, but not
Well, you can
today.
Now, but you have to do it via some people on Craigslist.
And that's all they charge is $255?
Yeah, $255. So,
Okay, very good. Well, some interesting tidbits there. And if anybody has any questions, when we return, we have another Social Security question that Chris has no clue on because I haven't even showed it to him yet.
Hopefully it's shorter than this one.
It is. And normally you answer these and reach out. So I do apologize to this person. Chris never reminded me to send it to him.
Funny. So when we come back from this short break, we are going to hear, speaking of Social Security, the number one song, well, a number one song from 1935. In this case, it's a country western hit performed by The Singing Cowboy. So we'll find out what that is after this short break here on the Retirement IRA Show. This is a short break, so we'll be right back at you.
Are you interested in your own customized Social Security analysis? If so, visit us at helpwithmysocialsecurity.com and click the Contact Jim and Chris button. Jim and Chris offer a $75 Social Security optimization analysis that includes a one-hour consultation to discuss the specifics of your Social Security situation. This very affordable offer is for both singles and couples and will provide you with the information you need to make an informed decision about claiming your Social Security benefit.
Tumbling down, pledging their love to the ground. Lonely but free, I'll be bound. Drifting along with a tumbling tumbleweed.
Well, welcome back to the Retirement IRA Show. It's one of the big hits from 1935, which was the year that Social Security started.
Why? Why was that a big hit? My God, that was painful to listen to.
Tumbling Tumbleweeds. That's a famous... Gene Autry? You're making fun of Gene Autry?
It didn't resonate with me. I don't think I could listen to that often. It's not on my playlist.
Well, other people have recorded it. You could listen to a more modern version of it. But this was written by Bob Nolan and performed by Gene Autry, as we just heard. Bob Nolan was employed as a caddy in Los Angeles when he wrote the song. Originally, the song was titled Tumbling Tumble Leaves. I don't know what tumble leaves are. Maybe he didn't really realize what tumble weeds were and thought that people talked about tumble leaves. So Gene Autry's cowboy movies were the first vehicle to carry country western music to a wide audience.
Wow.
So, yeah.
And that came out in 35.
Came out in 1935. Excellent. I didn't know Gene Autry was the owner of the Anaheim Angels baseball team for 36 years, from 1961 to 1997. Had no idea. That's a fun fact.
Did not know that at all.
No. So here we are back at the Retirement and IRA Show.
We are back at the Retirement and IRA Show. This is the email question show.
Right? So we knocked one out. We only have five more to go. So hopefully these are shorter.
Shorter questions, perhaps equally as long answers.
Okay.
There's one we're not going to get to because I'm going to have to dedicate like two or three shows to it.
Okay.
But this first one is from a Georgian.
Do we have a store on Georgia?
We do.
Oh, we do. Okay.
And the last one was a Georgette from Georgia. This is a George from Georgia.
That's an appropriate... Maybe if people want to stay really anonymous, we'll just always refer to people from Georgia. It's George from Georgia.
And would it be
or
text
Georgetown?
From, text from Texas? Flo from
no,
Florida?
No, because everything... Well, George.
Mary from Maryland?
No, we call everyone
I'm on a roll
George.
Here.
No, George. See, the word George is in Georgia?
Well, Flo is in Florida.
But
Texas
we don't
in Texas.
Call people Flo or Tex. We call
what do you
them
mean
George.
You don't call him Flo? Didn't you ever watch Alice?
On our show, we refer to everyone as George.
Oh, on our show, yeah.
And the point is, we could then refer to them as George from Georgia if they wanted to remain anonymous.
Oh,
in
you
location.
Want to make, you want to make the state private
exactly.
As well?
Exactly.
No, we don't mind saying the state. It's okay. Just this is this man's. For those who don't know, we do protect the privacy of our emailers. Even though I have this person's real name, we will call them, as we always do, George.
Just what I always wanted, my own little bunny rabbit. I will name him George, and I will hug him and pet him and squeeze him.
I'm not a bunny rabbit.
And this particular person must have been a longtime listener mm-hmm. because he put in parentheses George. So they mm-hmm. kind of get the joke at this point. So I'm going to read this. Chris has no... You haven't seen this, Chris, but I know you're going to be able to answer it because I could answer it and you know more about Social Security than I do. But let me read the question and then I'll add a little bit of clarity and then I'll let you answer it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So it begins with, I listen to your podcast as often as I can. We live in an Atlanta, Georgia suburb. Mm-hmm. So he says, my wife and I are both 68. If we continue to work another 2 years until we are 70 and then retire, what impact does that have on our primary insurance amount? Do those additional years of earnings remove some of the earlier years that have smaller incomes, like when we were back in the 60s and early 70s? And will they increase the PIA above and beyond at our full retirement age? And then he goes on to give us an example of what he means, Chris. He says, for example, if at age 66, which is my full retirement age, my PIA, my primary insurance amount, was $2,000 a month, but I actually keep working another 4 years before taking my Social Security, will the additional years of earnings get counted toward my PIA and essentially make it $2,000 plus? I do understand that delaying my Social Security each year provides an additional 8% per year bonus, but does the PIA actually go up during those working years after I reach my full retirement age? Now, I know you're
chomping at the bit. It's a horse reference.
Not the bit
is in their
stomp?
Mouth. They chomp at it when they're anxious to go.
Well, what is stomping at the chomp?
They're stomping at the Savoy.
That's what I was trying to say.
Chomping at the stomp. You've mutated. You've combined. This is yet another gymism. Chomping at the stomp.
Chomping at the stomp.
Won't mean anything to anyone but you.
Oh,
that's not a saying. Chomping at the stomp.
See, I thought I got it wrong when I said stomping at the chomp.
That's also incorrect, but chomping at the bit. You say,
chomping at
I
the
can
bit.
Tell you're chomping at the bit to
See,
do whatever
horses
XYZ.
Did it to me again.
You have a bad relationship with horses and horse-related metaphors.
Yes, mm-hmm. And horse-related tech.
Yes. At least use that word appropriate. I'm not sure how
tech,
you pulled
yes.
that one out.
Yes, I've heard of tech.
Okay.
Because there's a tech shop right down the road.
Oh.
And I never knew what it was. When I first moved here, I thought.
And so you dropped by and asked them.
A whole store for tacks? Hmm. Thumbtacks? I mean, how many different tacks do you have? Hmm. And it's not. That's what they call horse stuff. Hmm. Why do they call it tech? Because it's tacky?
No. It's just, why do they call anything anything?
It's got
to
mean
come
something.
Up a word for it.
I don't know. All right. So anyways, Chris is chomping apparently at the bit to get to answer this question. But before we do, for those who don't understand a few of the terms and concepts this gentleman's writing about, I want to clear the air a little here. He references quite often his primary insurance amount, which is also called PIA. I want people to understand what your PIA is because everything with your Social Security benefit essentially keys off of your PIA, your primary insurance amount. Your primary insurance amount is essentially the middle number on that statement you get. If you get your Social Security statement, you're usually given the value or the assumed value of your Social Security benefit at 3 points in your life, so to speak. And right now, for those who have a full retirement age of age 66, you usually have 3 numbers on your statement that show how much you would get at age 62, how much you would get at your full retirement age, and how much you would get at age 70. And of course, your final benefit will be dependent on at what point in time between 62 and 70 you retire. But your benefit will always be based off of your primary insurance amount, which is the amount you will receive at your full retirement age. So it is essentially the middle number, is for all intent and purposes your PIA. How they arrive at PIA is they simply look at your earnings over 35 years of your life. They're not concurrent years. They can be all over. You could be.
You meant consecutive. Concurrent means happening at the same time. Consecutive
no.
means one followed by the other.
That's the one I mean.
Yes. They don't have to be consecutive.
All right. Damn.
Any 35 years.
I was on a roll.
The best. Your best 35.
My best 35. Oh, your best 35. Mm-hmm. Not concurrently, right?
No, that's like concurrent sentences for a prisoner.
Correct. So yeah. They don't have to be in a row. That's
correct.
What I was trying to say.
Mm-hmm.
God.
That's consecutive.
Okay. Maybe we have to start editing these pre-recorded shows.
No, that'd be... We'd lose half the fun of the show.
But I want to sound brilliant.
Well, the show would be half as long, but it was the other issue.
The other one is correcting my grammar.
Right.
Okay. So, back to what I was trying to say. I know Social Security and IRAs. I don't quite have mastered the English language yet, apparently. So, what I'm trying to get you to understand is they're going to look at your highest 35 years no matter when they happened. And if you didn't work for 35 years, they will throw in some zeros, which is kind of what this gentleman might be alluding to. They're going to take those 35 years. They're going to adjust them for wage inflation.
And that's the key, and I think he's missing part of that.
Correct.
Here, when he's looking back at old earnings in the 60s and 70s, he sees very
exactly.
small amounts,
very small, yeah.
thinking, well, now I make a whole lot more. They adjust those. They're
right.
going to turn those into...
And I'll let you address mm-hmm. that as soon as you get to the
yeah.
answer. I'm just so what I'm trying to get people to understand, to get to his primary insurance amount, because he does reference that quite often, they're going to take his highest 35 years adjusted for wage inflation, not CPI inflation. And wage inflation is generally higher than CPI inflation, although right now neither types of inflation are really moving, wage inflation or CPI inflation. But they will adjust your earnings the highest 35 you made throughout your life, putting in zeros if you don't have 35 years. They're going to add that all together. So you're going to have one big number. So they're going to add all those earnings together, adjusted for inflation, and divide by 420. 420 is the number of months in 35 years. That is going to get what they called your average indexed monthly earnings. From there, they're going to apply these bend points. We won't bore you with that. But three bend points will be applied to your average index monthly earnings. They will add those three bend points together, and voila, your PIA arrives.
Mm-hmm.
And your PIA is how they are going to determine your benefits and any ancillary benefits that someone under you may be entitled to, such as a dependent child, a dependent parent, or a spouse. But it all will key off of your PIA. So that's what he was referencing. Your full retirement age, by the way, is going to be dependent on when you were born. Right now, everybody born prior to 1955, so 54 and earlier. Am I correct on that? Because I'm pulling that out of nowhere. Isn't
right.
it 55?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
This is the last year that when people are turning 62, that they're at full retirement age 66. Starting
correct.
Next year will be people that were born in 1955. And those people's full retirement age is 66 and 2 months.
Correct. And everybody born between 1955 and 1960, every year adds 2 months to their full retirement age. Why is your full retirement age so important? Your full retirement age is the year and age, rather, you will be eligible to receive your primary insurance amount as your benefit. So if you wanted to get that primary insurance amount beginning next year, this particular George, he said his full retirement age was 66.
Mm-hmm.
If he was born 1 year later, it would be 66 and 2 months. If he was born 2 years after that, it would have been 66 and four
well,
months.
Well, he's 68, so he'd have to be born a lot of years later.
Correct. But you see,
yeah. mm-hmm.
every year between 1955 and 1960 will add 2 months to your full retirement age. And then everybody born after 1960, such as Chris and I, our full retirement age is age 67. So I wanted to lay that out, but why don't you help now answer his question, which essentially is he's wondering, by waiting, he knows he's going to get 8% delayed retirement credits. Most of our listeners know that. Every year you wait to collect your Social Security after the age or after your full retirement age will give you 8% more Social Security. He knows he's going to be entitled to 8% more per year that he waits between 66 and 70, but he's wondering, as he continues to work, Chris, could his primary insurance amount also increase?
The answer is it could. Just because you work after, actually it has nothing to do with working after your full retirement age, which he is at age 66, but rather any work that you do after your age of first eligibility, which is age 62. That's the earliest age at which you can claim a Social Security retirement benefit. Your PIA is officially generated at that point. At that point, they draw a line in the sand and say, we're going to establish your official PIA right now when you turn 62. They're going to look back find the 35 best years to include in the calculation, and they're going to set your PIA. Now, something unique happens after age 62. After age 62, your PIA can only go up. It can't go down. So some people wonder, well, gee, if I stop working now, if I retire fairly early and I have zeros in there, is that going to punish me in my calculation? No. Nothing you can do, or working part-time. People are worried about working part-time and having years that are much lower than before. Nothing you can do working-wise after age 62 can harm or reduce your PIA. But activities, work activities, can increase it. Literally every year when wages are reported to Social Security Administration, they will look at that, and if that year's earnings are better than one of the 35 indexed years that they used in your original calculation, they will put that number in instead, recalculate it, and you will get a little higher PIA. So the answer to his question is, if his earnings are high enough, not just high enough in the raw dollars, say, just to make up some numbers, $30,000 of earnings here at his age 68, you go back and look at $20,000 worth of earnings in 1970, the $30,000 in 2016 aren't going to be better than the $20,000 in 1970, because those 1970 earnings are transformed into effective 2016 earnings, applying all the inflation that's happened over that 46 years. A lot of inflation that's happened over that period. So the $20,000 in 1970 is actually worth a lot more in the wage calculation here than $30,000 in 2016. So that's how they adjust that. And there's a nice pamphlet from Social Security that shows you exactly how much earnings in previous years are adjusted to turn them into 2016 equivalent earnings. And if you're interested in that, contact me and I can direct you to that particular pamphlet. And it even has an example of how to calculate your PIA in there. But bottom line, work you do after age 62 can help you by increasing your PIA if they're large enough, but they can't harm you by being too low or even zeros.
The one thing I also want to point out, which is unfortunate, but these people would have been prime file and suspend candidates before the rule changed. It's too late now for them to do it, because I get the impression that they're both 68, husband and wife, both so delaying to 70. And unfortunately, if he had been listening to us earlier or following us on a Social Security blog, one of them, when they turned 66 2 years ago, could have filed and suspended their benefits, allowing the other to file a restricted application for half of the PIA that was suspended while both their benefits grow to age 70. And they're not going to be eligible to do that. However, I am going to encourage this couple to strongly consider doing a Social Security analysis. Not necessarily with us. I mean, you can do it with us if you want. We offer one for $75. But you can find someone maybe down near you if you wanted to, if you didn't want to work with someone over the internet. Because, Chris, depending on what their life expectancies are, they both can file restricted applications. So maybe one of them, if one of them has a lower than average life expectancy, or if both their earnings are close in value, there's a lot of moving parts here. It may behoove one of them to turn their Social Security on earlier rather than later.
I was going to say that as well, because the research that's been done on this has shown that rarely is it the best approach for both spouses to delay to 70. Even if you're not going to play any of these kind of strategies of file and suspend and restricted application and all that kind of stuff, rarely does it make sense, because both spouses are probably not going to live the same length of time. So at some point, one is going to pass away, leaving the other with just one benefit, the highest of the two. So trying to maximize both to 70 turns out to actually, since you're going to lose one of them when one of you passes away, the benefits, one of the big benefits of delaying, kind of gets lost for one of them. So I'm not going to say for this couple, go out and do that, because we don't have nearly enough information to make that assessment. But I suspect when we do, if you know someone who crunches the numbers properly on this, the optimum strategy, if you will, probably does not involve both delaying to 70.
Right. So when I originally got this email, we just received this, goodness, I think What's the date today?
15th or 16th? I don't know. It's 17th. We're
okay,
way behind.
So we actually just received this. I got this email confused. I thought I received it a few weeks ago. I received this 2 days ago. So I'm going to encourage those people to mm-hmm. listen to this show, but I'm also going to encourage them. They could very well benefit from an optimization analysis. And we place a lot of emphasis in our office on life expectancy. We generally will send people to livetoo100.com. That's L-I-V, live, L-I-V. Is it live or live? Is it live 200 or living 200?
I think it's live to. I've never gone there, so I...
Okay. I should know because I've taken the test. I'm only going to live to 86, it says.
Well, the crystal ball says that.
That's what they told me, although I'm up 2 years. When I first took it, it was 84. And then a couple years later, I took it again. I'm up to 86. So I'm buying time. But it's either live2100.com or living2100. I apologize for not having the exact address, website address. But why we send people there is we want to find out what their life expectancy is, because we want to use their real life expectancies in the Social Security analysis. This is something new we're doing. Prior to this, we used to look at Social Security as a break-even analysis. But now we start to realize the biggest unknown in maximizing your Social Security is your life expectancy. Here we have a couple, both trying to get to age 70, but what if their life expectancies are shorter than average? That may not be the best bet. So we now get people to go to this website, and there's a few others out there as well, but we use, I think it's Living2100. Well, why don't you look
I'll clarify it while you're talking.
Okay. So we try to get people to get their life expectancy because those are the numbers we want to use in the analysis. And that will tell us if it's best for both of you to continue to delay. Both of you in a unique situation. You have been grandfathered in under the old rules to be able to file a restricted application. Excuse me. You guys have both missed the ability to file and suspend. That ship has sailed. One or both of you would have to have done it by April 29th of this year. So we missed that deadline. But if one of you begins collecting, the other will be allowed to continue to let their benefit grow to 70 while you collect half of the spouse who's filed, while you collect half of their primary insurance amount. So you're going to get paid for waiting. You're going to start bringing money into the family sooner. And it could be the better option depending on what your life expectancy is.
Right. And you can also, if you do this since they're past their full retirement age, they can claim retroactively and actually claim up to
six months
worth of benefits and kind of get a lump sum payout to them if they... Some people use that to go on vacation or buy a new car.
Or just to make
whatever.
Claiming now a better option,
all kinds
depending
of options,
on life expectancy. If one of you have a shorter than average life expectancy, in other words, if you're, is it living two or live
it's
two?
It's living two. 100.
So it is living. Okay, mm-hmm. That's what I thought. Living two, and it's the number two. No, it's the letter two, T-O. Living two, but the number 100. Living two, the number 100.com. If you go there, you can take a life expectancy test.
And they just, instead of making it general for the whole population, they customize it and tweak it based on your answers to a number of lifestyle and health questions.
Correct. And that, is it infallible? No. But what it does allow us to do is look at this a little differently and say, well, wait a minute. One of you may pass away at 83. I'm just making this number up. And now it's not wise to wait to 70. That person may want to claim now, allowing the other spouse who is going to delay to continue to delay, but receive half of their spousal benefit, essentially, because they are allowed to file a restricted application. The spouse who's going to file can also file for 6 months retroactive. And could the spouse do the same?
Yes, I believe.
I believe she could. Or she could as well. So both of you may be able to file for 6 months retroactive. We'll confirm that either on this show later or in another show. But we're both under the impression that the spousal benefit is also eligible for 6 months retroactive. So you might find that could be a better option. So it's just something to think about. But you really should find someone either down there in Georgia who understands Social Security. Or again, we offer, I hate to sound like a broken record or a infomercial here, but we do offer a $75 Social Security analysis. And we offer this to people throughout the country. And we can help you evaluate everything. And then you talk to us for an hour on the phone. And we can answer a lot of your questions on what the strategy for your claiming is.
Perfect. So we're at the top of the hour break here. When we come back, we're going to hear the number one song from 40 years ago this week in 1976. And this week's top song was written as, it's written as homage to Motown style, most notably the duets recorded by Marvin Gaye.
Huh?
It's written in the Marvin Gaye style.
That's the hint?
That's the hint. So we'll find out what that is right after the short break.
You have listened to Jim on the radio, read his quotes in the media, and enjoyed his banter on iTunes. But even now, you may wonder what sets Jim Saulnier and Associates apart from other financial planning companies. The answer is quite simple. Jim's diverse team of professionals specializes in retirement planning. They form a lifelong relationship with you and measure their success not through product sales, but through the security and prosperity you may achieve in your retirement. Jim's entire team shares his unwavering commitment to placing their clients' best interests first while offering their services at fair prices with full disclosures. The professionals at Jim Saulnier & Associates are available to assist you with your retirement planning needs. Visit jimhelps.com to schedule your complimentary coffee and a second opinion meeting. That's Jim, H-E-L-P-S.com. Or call 970-530-0556.
Welcome back to the Retirement and IRA Show. It is the number one song from 1976 as we look back 40 years ago this week. Number one song repeats from last week as well. That's Elton John and Kiki Dee with Don't Go Breaking My Heart. It was the second biggest selling record of 1976. Number one was Silly Love Songs by Paul McCartney.
How was that in the Marvin Gaye genre?
I don't know.
Sexual healing and heard it through the grapevine and all that's nothing like that.
I'm not sure Elton can sing like that. So it was his attempt.
I mean, we'll
call it an attempt.
When I hear that song, I don't think, wow, hey.
Sounds
like Marvin Gaye.
Yeah, no, I agree. I just read what's written.
Well, we may have to sit down to our fact finder.
Have her come up with better hints.
Well, if the hint is good,
or her ability to research.
Tina's ability.
No,
she's very able.
Yeah,
I just think that hint was. I would not come equate Elton John and that song with was it Kiki D or whatever it is,
mm-hmm. Kiki D,
as being Marvin Gaye-esque.
You'll have to take it up with Tina.
All right, just saying. And I'm sure our listeners are out there shaking their heads in agreement with me.
Right. So in the last segment, we talked about another Social Security email that we received, really asking the question, if you work past your full retirement age, and I pointed out even if you work past age 62, will that increase your PIA, your primary insurance amount, which is your full retirement age benefit? And the answer is yes, it can if the earnings are large enough, but it will not hurt you if your earnings are low or zero. So it can only help you, is the bottom line.
But we also encourage that person to do an analysis because waiting, as they both are, may not be in their best option.
Exactly.
Okay.
So email three.
Email number three. This one is, as you can see, very short.
Oh, very nice.
It's very, very pithy. And it may actually need Pete. It's a tax-driven question. Mm. I'm 99.9% sure I know the answer without actually researching it because I didn't have time to
research
it.
That's close enough for radio.
No. We got to be certain. So Pete, for those who don't know, is Peter Scott, Esquire. He is the estate planning attorney who has been practicing estate planning attorney for 43 years or 47 years? Heck of a long time.
Long time.
Long time.
Might have been since the 1840s.
No, I don't think it was that long. But poor Pete. Pete, if you're listening, Chris was just kidding. You don't look a day over 1860s. But Pete's been doing this for a very long time, and he's retiring. However, he also has his Juris Doctor in taxation. So not only is he a very good person to talk to about estate taxes, he's a fine individual to talk to about taxation issues. And this is more driven by taxation. But I see where the person is going with this, but I don't quite think it works that way. And so let me read it, and then perhaps you can opine a little, Chris. I'll opine. But we will definitely throw it on the other side of the desk here where Pete sits when he records, because I think he's recording. Oh, wait a minute. Maybe we won't go live because I think it's written in the book that Pete is here next week to record.
Oh.
But I'll see if he wants to go live on the 27th or whatever day that is.
Sounds excellent.
Okay. You're doing something, so you ready?
I'm ready.
See, I always pay attention.
I'm shopping for shoes right now.
You are shopping for shoes.
Yeah. Well, I like these shoes, and I just wanted to see if I could score another pair.
Can you?
Not yet. I'm still looking.
They don't look worn out.
No, but when I find some that fit well and I like, I usually store up two or three, especially if I can get a deal on them.
Okay.
I got these at Sam's Club for $10. Unfortunately, the duplicates that I'm finding online are like $60, so apparently I got a really good deal.
How did you get those at Sam's for $10 if they're $60 online?
Some closeout deal. I should have bought more.
You should have bought more. They don't have them anymore at Sam's?
No, this was like a year ago. So
yeah, well, they're fresh out. Sam's replaces their stock quite often. Well, you blew it.
I know. Well, hopefully this question will be interesting and it'll save us.
We shall see, but pay attention so I don't have to repeat it twice.
I'm listening.
Okay, I have no idea where they're from because she didn't say.
Georgia. We'll just call it Georgia.
And I'm not sure if it's a he or a she because their name could be either.
Okay.
But we will always call them George. And they write, "Hi, Jim and Chris. Here is something I've never heard you talk about. I know that money taken out of a 401k is taxed as income after the," then they put in parentheses, "I'm talking after the age of 59 and a half. But if that person moves out of the country in retirement, would income taxes still be due to the United States?" And my take is yes, you have to give up your citizenship before you are exempt from taxation in the United States.
However,
not simply moving out.
Mm-hmm. It'll also depend on where you are and whether that country is going to want to tax that income as well.
And at which point you get a deduction.
There's some tax coordination things where you might get a credit on one side in order to recognize the fact that you're paying tax to another entity. So
Absolutely.
These international tax issues get pretty complicated. I can understand why you want to throw this one over to Pete.
Yes, this would be more of a Pete question, but from my very limited knowledge of international taxation, simply moving out of the country does not exempt you from taxes to the United States. If you give up your citizenship, it's a whole different boat, and you may be able to exempt yourself from taxation. That's why some very wealthy people every now and then will give up their citizenship to save on taxes. But if you relocate to another country, and a lot of people do that initially in retirement, they especially move to Central American countries, Costa Rica and others, where the cost of living is tremendously low. A lot of expats move down there. They don't give up their U.S. citizenship. They just may live the first 5, 10, 12 years of retirement down there, and then eventually relocate later in life back to the United States. And they do it because cost of living down there relative to the United States is tremendously cheaper. But it's not going to, while they're out of the country, exempt them from taxation. Because think of it this way, listener. What would stop someone from moving to another country, not giving up their U.S. citizenship, fully distributing their IRA in 1 year, putting that money in a regular bank account and then saying,
and
then I was out of the country when I did that. I don't owe any taxes, but oop, now I'm back. But the money's not in an IRA anymore, so you can't tax it. They're kind of onto that. So that's why it's not going to quite work this way. But if you are in another country, and it's going to depend on what country, it's going to depend on the tax treaties, I am pretty sure, as Chris said, any taxes you pay to another country will, I believe, to one degree or another, be deductible against taxes you may owe to the United States government. Some will allow you to deduct it, but I don't quite know the rules behind that. And for that, we'll ask Pete. But I don't quite think simply going to another country initially in retirement will allow you to get the money out of the IRA tax-free, or there would be travel agencies springing up left and right.
That would be the retirement strategy of a lifetime.
Yes. I'm going to retire.
Make a one-week trip.
At, 1 year.
At age 60.
Take out all your money.
Take out all your money. No penalty. And, oh, by the way, no taxes since you were living in XYZ country at the time. So, yeah, that's not going to work, unfortunately.
I don't think it'll work.
No.
But I will reach out to those people, let them know to listen to the show. And when Pete comes in, we'll throw this on his shoulders, see if he can add anything else that we're not quite thinking of as far as those tax treaties go. Because I'm pretty sure, 99.9999% sure, you're not just going to be able to take the money out tax-free. But the issue is, how much of a deduction would you get for taxes paid to another country? Okay. Which one do I want to go to? All right, this one. This one came in June 30th, so we're a little bit behind the eight ball on answering this one.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Hopefully you've answered it to them directly.
Negative.
We should send them a cake or a pie or something.
An apology?
Something.
Well, we try to make perfectly clear, and hopefully people listen on a regular basis. We encourage emails. We like them. Gives us something to talk about. But we have very busy lives. Chris has a full-time job at Colorado State University, part-time job here for me, full-time wife, 6 children, an undetermined amount of chickens. It varies from week to week. So he's quite busy.
So that explains my issue. I don't understand the single person with only one dog. And what else?
I have a full-time job and a dog. A dog is a lot of work.
Okay.
And one full-time job? Mm-hmm. That's more than a man can handle.
Apparently.
So you could see I am far busier than Chris is. I have a social life. He doesn't. I have this social calendar that I have to keep.
Yeah.
Going with the active athletic singles groups to Morrison.
Once a year.
No, I go out with them all the time. This is going to be my first time to their summer picnic. Okay, so I do apologize to this listener, but it's a fairly easy question. I don't know if I can answer it.
Hopefully it's of benefit to others, because I'm sure this person stopped listening since you never answered their question.
So they're not paying attention anymore. I will reach out to him. He is from Maryland. Do we have a star?
No. Oh, yes, we do.
Oh, that blends in. You can't even notice it.
But yes, we do.
Okay, so we already have a Marylander. Okay.
We don't have Kentucky, South Carolina, the blob here of Arkansas, Louisiana, Mississippi, Alabama, that grouping right there. We have nothing. Nebraska, Kansas, and very little from out west. So please contact us if you're in those areas.
It does surprise me that Nebraska being so close to Colorado and Kansas. Nobody in those two, maybe they're outgrowing their corn. They don't have a time.
They could be a lot busier than folks. Yeah. Or retirees. They've moved from those places down to these other places.
True. Just because people live in the South, we have a good amount of people from the coastal South. Mm-hmm. And New England is probably because of my accent. I'm huge in New England. Huge.
Huge.
I'm telling you, it's huge. Okay, so back to this question. It's a fairly straightforward show, but he begins, I just listened to your June 4th show. Wow, it's been a long time since we read this email. Do you remember what we talked about on June 4th?
No, but I could look it up.
But he begins, I just listened to your June 4th show while walking the dogs, which is the only time I listen to the podcast. Well, therein lies an issue. He only listens to us when he's walking his dogs.
But that's not an issue. That's not a problem.
Well, you could listen to us at any time. in a car when you're driving, at home in the rocking chair. I usually listen to podcasts on more than just walking my dog. But nonetheless, when he's walking his dogs, he listens to podcasts. Heard the shows on QLAX too. I found them interesting. Probably use. It's not a QLAX question. Don't put your head down. Heard the previous QLAX shows too. I found them interesting. Probably useful to many, but not for me. Then he begins. I'm a retired engineer with a pension, IRAs, TSP, which stands for Thrift Savings Plan. So it's telling me he probably at one point worked for the federal government. And should start receiving Social Security within the next couple of months. I keep somewhat informed about how the market is doing and follow various sources of information for investing and retirement planning. I've only been listening to your show for the last 8 to 10 months, but find I've already been doing many of the things you talk about. Today's comment about withdrawing IRA and TSP to manage and fill your tax bracket hit home. I've been doing it for the last 2 years. I manage my own investments, and based on what I hear from you and friends, I don't see any reason to change. We'll probably begin to rethink that strategy in 8 to 10 years as I lose interest and capability. With all that said, my question is, what proportion of the public are you aware of, clients and previous consultations, that manage their own assets? Thanks. I enjoy the show. We'll call him George from Maryland. Interesting. I don't know if this was more of a commentary or a question, but he does bring up a few things that I want, because he nails it on a few parts here that I want our listeners to hone in on. His main gist at the end, how many people have I seen anecdotally in my practice, and I guess in 17 years of being a retirement planner, how many people manage their own assets? And I don't actually ever break that down and to tell you, but I remember a statistic from a very, very long time ago, and I don't know who ever came up with this statistic, but it was 15%. I was at a symposium for financial planners, and it was an idea of how much of the public could benefit from hiring an advisor. How much or what percent of the public would actually be interested in working with an advisor? And I just remembered this stat because it was so easy to remember. 15% of the public, according to this presenter, and of course they never explained where they got these stats from. 15% manage their own assets and manage their own retirement and have no interest in working with an advisor. 15% are just apathetic and don't care what happens anyways. They're never going to work with anyone. And it's about 70% of the public who are actively seeking counsel and advice. So I don't know that that might help answer his question that perhaps 15%, and we may even throw the 15% who do nothing is essentially doing something. Their something just happens to be nothing. So perhaps, well, that's true.
Their something happens to be nothing?
Their something is nothing.
Okay.
And nothing is something.
Mm-hmm.
So perhaps I would say about 30% of the public do it on their own, and about 70% of the public seek help. I don't know if that's what he's looking for, but that's what I see. What intrigued me and made me want to address this question, and again, I apologize to him for taking essentially 2 months to get to this, but we'll blame Chris somehow on that, is how he picks up, Chris, that he, right now, he makes it perfectly clear he has no intention of changing what he's doing. But he recognizes as he loses interest and capability, over the next 8 to 10 years, he may rethink that.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the key that I want people to pick up on. He says he's retired and he's going to begin Social Security in a few more months. So I'm going to guess he's over 62, but under 70. Maybe he waited to 70 to collect his Social Security. So he's somewhere between 62 and 70. I'm just going to reach out and guess there. Let's just take the difference and say he's 66 years old. He probably begins to realize that in another 8 to 10 years, as he gets into his late 70s, he may not be interested in managing investments anymore, or he may lose the ability to manage his investments. And we talk about that, Chris, constantly on the show. I try to tell people, whether you are listening to the radio show, whether you call us because you're an iTunian from another state and you're calling us for a coffee and a second opinion discussion, or you're in Northern Colorado somewhere and you're coming into our office for coffee and a second opinion discussion, I often tell people, let's say it was a 60-year-old sitting across from me. I would say to them, Chris, I may be talking to the 60-year-old you, but I'm advocating for the 70, 80, and 90-year-old you. And it is crucial, people, if you are in your 50s and 60s, to look at your retirement plan through the eyes of someone in their 80s. You may understand it in your 50s. Your brain, we talked about these studies before, Chris, the Harvard study. And we had someone reach out to us, actually. Did we talk about that on the radio? I don't know. A gentleman reached out to me through the radio show. He's an iTunian. I forget what state he was in. Wanted that Harvard study. So I sent it to him. And he wrote back to me, 72 pages, my God, or 72 pages, wow. I can't remember how he worded it. He says, I'm not sure I can get through that. But I had told him that the parts of the 72-page study to look at, because the Harvard study found that the part of our brain that understands financial concepts is one of the last to develop and one of the first to degrade. And I always throw my nephew Evan under the bus at this point, although I recently talked to Evan, Chris. It was his 25th birthday.
Mm-hmm. And he decided to sell his purchase?
No. He was talking about transferring the guns to Massachusetts that he got. Oh. But he just seemed more mature in
well, you'd hope he would be.
He's as he's getting 25 into, right, now. He's getting mm-hmm. 25. And he talks about taking things more of a long-term approach. He'd mentioned his retirement. And his grandfather left him a good sum of money in a type of account that would be available for his retirement, but also left him a fair amount of money that Evan wants to use for a home purchase someday. And he wants to keep the other money for his house, for his retirement. No more buying did he want a Maserati or did he want, he wanted some godforsaken fast car. Lamborghini, I think it was. And though that's gone. He says, Uncle Jimmy, no, I don't want that. That would be silly to waste that money on that. And I'm just impressed that as he's getting older, for those who don't know, 3 years ago when Evan was 22, he came out to Colorado to visit. And I went to work one day. I came home and I went into the house and he's gleefully there with two firearms and one set of optics that would make my optics that I hunt with look like Walmart specials. And all total, it was about $6,000 for everything that he had. And he thought that was the wisest thing in the world is for someone to buy $6,000 worth of firearms that are not legal in the state he lives in just to be able to take photos of and put on his Facebook page and to shoot while he visits me in Colorado. He thought it was a brilliant idea. Not so much. But he did say he found out he can have those guns transferred to Massachusetts, but he has to have them turned into Massachusetts-eligible firearms. So they have to augment a lot of the things he paid extra for.
They have to fill the barrel with epoxy.
Yeah.
Right?
They're going to sink it
in
cement.
And remove the trigger.
But in order for him to have these, what are often called, I guess, assault weapons, they're nothing more than a glorified hunting rifle. But in order for him to have these in Massachusetts, many of the options that he paid for, he has to get rid of. So he said if he can find a place to do that, he will pay, not me. He said he will pay for the guns to be shipped to a firearm dealership in Massachusetts mm-hmm. that will pretty much rip the gun apart and make it legal in Massachusetts, or as you say, fill the barrel with epoxy and yeah, sink
and
it
remove,
in cement.
And remove the trigger.
Remove the trigger. Yeah. And, but anyways, the part I want our listeners to understand and what I want our listeners to understand that I want to congratulate this iTunian who emailed us, he picked up Chris on this. He picked up that he recognizes he gets it now, but he may not get it in the future. So we often tell people it's important to put a retirement plan together because as we age, we know we are going to grow older and weaker physically, mentally, and for many of us, financially. Of those three, only one is truly within the realm of somebody in their 50s and 60s to help address for when they get into their 70s and 80s. Now, doctors, if we had Dr. Tusick here again, who was our guest last week, he may say, you know, Jim, there are things we can do to help reduce the effects of aging as we age. True, we may be able to slow some of the physical and mental aging, but we can't stop it. But you can put together plans that will help grow your future financial health, that it could actually strengthen as you get older. It's possible. Can't work with everyone, but it's possible. But what I really liked about this individual, Chris, is he did pick up on the fact that he may need to seek counsel later. And I also gather, because he was asking, how many people really do this on their own? He might be having some doubts. I would encourage him to seek out an advisor who is not going to demand or require his money actually be transferred and invested, and that advisor will only work with you if you move your money over to him so that advisor can take some of it. We've talked about my business model has changed over the years, and unfortunately, the industry is still predicated on that. You have to invest with an advisor before they'll talk with you. But many companies operate like mine does. We don't have to manage money. If people want advice, a second opinion, a review, he may benefit from hiring someone, Chris, who could look at this, his situation, and say, you know what, I think you're on track, or you're not considering this, that, or the other thing. And you may want to consider that. Money management, and we'll continue with this in the next segment, money management is just one aspect of the retirement planning process.
Perfect. So we'll get back to a little bit more on that after this short break. And when we come back from this break, we're going to hear the number one song from this week in 1981 as we look back 35 years. This number one hit was nominated for both an Oscar and Academy Award for Best Original Song, but didn't win an award until 1982, the next year, when it won an American Music Award for Favorite Pop Rock Single. So this number one lasts for a bit and actually became even more awarded or rewarded in 1982, but we're going to look back to 1981 this week. So we'll be back with you right after this short break.
Are you interested in your own customized Social Security analysis? If so, visit us at helpwithmysocialsecurity.com and click the Contact Jim and Chris button. Jim and Chris offer a $75 Social Security optimization analysis that includes a one-hour consultation to discuss the specifics of your Social Security situation. This very affordable offer is for both singles and couples and will provide you with the information you need to make an informed decision about claiming your Social Security benefit.
My love, there's only you in my life, the only thing that's right.
My first love.
Well, welcome back to the Retirement and IRA Show. That is number one song again this week, Endless Love, performed by Lionel Richie and Diana Ross. So this was the best-selling single of Diana Ross's career, believe it or not. It was also Richie's highest charting single and the first of several 1980s hits. Fascinating.
That ended rather abruptly. Usually you fade.
Well, I did, but then it kind of faded abruptly at the end. I was fading, and then it just dropped off.
So. Yeah, that's just very abrupt. Just mm-hmm. Boom, gone.
Well, we needed to be done with that. So that is the number one song 35 years ago this week as we look back with our musical
homage to Social Security.
Yeah.
For those
who
don't
expand on that?
Well, what we do is because Chris is getting ready to have Tom Jones start singing What's New Pussycat.
I am.
You are.
Perfect.
Because what we're going to do is give you an update on what's new on helpwithmysocialsecurity.com. We always do this in the beginning of the fourth segment. As a fun way to lead into that, we thought we would do it with music. So that's why if you've actually listened to the entire show, my first question you would probably be, why? My second point would be, let me explain how come we begin with 1935. 1935 and the song from 1935 represents the year Social Security was first created. Then in the beginning of the third segment of the show, we begin with a song from 1940, because when Social Security was first founded...
Negative, 1971.
1971, 40 years ago. Because when Social Security was first founded, the calculation for your benefit was based on 40 elapsed years. It's just a weird, archaic calculation they did, because people back then didn't actually pay into Social Security for their entire lives, because it was just created in 1935. So that's why we began with a song from 40 years ago. Then we just led in with a song, number one song in America from 35 years ago, because today, as we answered an earlier question on the show, today they look at 35 computation years to determine your primary insurance amount. So that's why we look back 35 years ago. And now that's why Chris is going to lead in with Tom Jones and give us an update on what's new on helpwithmysocialsecurity.com.
What's new, pussycat? Whoa, 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 whoa. What's new, pussycat? Whoa, 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 whoa.
So this week on helpwithmysocialsecurity.com, we have a reversal from the week prior. The week prior, I discussed the fact that Social Security Administration had instituted a new rule that required you use a cell phone to receive a text message whenever you wanted to log into your online Social Security account. They started that in July 30th. Well, apparently, they underestimated the number of people that either didn't have a cell phone or were uncomfortable or unable to receive text messages on their phone in order to access their Social Security account. They removed that requirement on August 15th, so it lasted just over 2 weeks. So this week I discussed the fact that that restriction or that requirement is gone. However, the option is still there. And I would encourage you, as the Social Security Administration does, if you're comfortable with that form of authentication, where not only do they require a username and password, but also this code that they text to you while you're logging in, if you're comfortable with that, it just it elevates the level of security on your account and reduces the chance that someone unauthorized will access it. But it is no longer a requirement. They're investigating other options here, and as those get rolled out, I will certainly announce them. Any questions?
Negative.
What's new, pussycat?
So back to our email questions. Do we have one final one to hit, or do you want to add a little bit more to the last one? I want to finish
on the last one. Mm-hmm. What I was getting into and what I want this listener and our listeners to understand, he had picked up, he was doing everything himself. He was wondering if that was a wise thing and how many people managed their own money. Everything for him was revolving around asset management, and he wanted to know what proportion of people that you're aware of manage their own assets. What I wanted to point out to this listener and to our listeners in general, asset management is just one small aspect of retirement planning. He may have a good understanding of investments. He may feel he's doing a fine job, and he very well may be. And he's keeping his costs low by doing it himself. He's not paying someone to help him. But managing assets is just one aspect. I don't know if he's doing everything else correctly. Is his tax diversification, which is a question that's coming up in the next question we get to, is his tax diversification okay? Everything is in IRAs, 401ks, TSPs, I don't know. Could he benefit from selective conversions? What will happen when he reaches age 70 and a half and required minimum distributions must begin? Will that push him into a higher tax bracket? Will those required distributions start to subject his Social Security to greater taxes? Could he benefit from Roth conversions? Is he going to be leaving at his passing inherited retirement account assets? They're some of the worst assets to leave a human because of the special distribution rules that non-spouses and even spouses must abide by. So would he be better off leveraging some of his retirement accounts? I don't know what all these other issues could be, Chris. What is his medical needs going to be? Will he have the best Medigap policy? He's with the federal government. Should he stay in that? Should he use Medicare in a Medigap, or should he use traditional in the federal government? They have a choice. I don't know if he's married with a spouse. Is she younger, older? What is her health? What is his health? What payouts did he take on his annuity? Single life, joint life? These are all some of the things that need to be evaluated here. Does he have children? Are any of the children spendthrifts? Or are they married to people you don't like? Or do you worry your children may marry someone you don't like? Or are they employed in professions that have a higher than normal propensity for lawsuits? Are they a doctor, a dentist, or someone else that could easily be sued? Should you look at your inheritances being left to a trust to help protect those? There's all sorts of elements to retirement planning. These are things that are just flying off the top of my head. These are things that I have experienced and work with people all the time on. I'm just trying to get them to understand, and I think you would agree, Chris, asset management is just one small part of retirement planning.
And so many people concentrate so much on that. I really fear a lot of times they're leaving money on the table, or money is going places away from them, oftentimes in the form of taxes that they otherwise could avoid or not pay, because they're focused so much on the ball on the right-hand side, they're not realizing all the things on the left that they actually have more direct control over than what might be happening with their assets that are being invested either by themselves or by someone else.
And especially when we come across federal government employees, and I'm guessing he used to be with the feds only because he mentions that he has a pension and a TSP. TSP is the Thrift Savings Plan, which is a federal government retirement plan. If their pension, if he's a CSRS or even a FERS with the federal government, their pension benefits are usually quite rich. They're good benefits. And he may be in a situation where he doesn't need all of his required minimum distributions later in life. He's going to be forced to take them, and his retirement assets are going to grow to very high levels. He may think as an investment person, wow, that is great. I'm going to be able to leave my spouse and kids a lot of money. No, you're not. Because all your retirement accounts are joint accounts. Chris is smiling. He knows where I'm going with this. Everyone knows you can't have a joint IRA, right, Chris?
Right.
The I in IRA stands for?
Individual.
Correct. And that applies to your 401k, your TSP. They're not joint. They're individually owned. But so many people, Chris, don't take into account they are jointly owned with your uncle. Uncle Sam is going to take a good chunk of that. So if you spend your life managing your assets very well to the point that you're going to leave a very large IRA and a very large TSP to your wife or to your children, you're not really doing them a favor. You are doing them a favor, but you're not leaving them as much as you think, because your uncle is going to have his hand in the till long before them. And there could be strategies instead through Roth conversions or through life insurance that could actually leave a significantly greater 100% tax-free inheritance, essentially disinheriting the crazy uncle. So these are just some of the things that as a planner, I think he should be looking at, not just managing his assets. That is one small part of retirement planning. So he did indicate in 8 to 10 years, he's interested in reaching out to someone to have help managing their assets. That's great. But I would encourage you right now to reach out to someone who is willing to work with you and not manage your assets. Someone who is going to work with you, and yeah, you're going to have to pay him or her, but someone who will give you opinions and advice and ideas on things you're probably not looking at, because these people are professionals and they do this for a living. That's why we go to doctors. That's why we go to eye doctors. And that's why we go to attorneys. And that's why we go to financial planners. Because these people do it their entire lives. I agree. Stay away from the financial advisor who wants to charge you 1.25%, 1.5%, 2%, whatever it is, of your assets, and will refuse to work with you if you don't have a certain amount of assets. It's like that silly little ride when before my growth hormones kicked in, and I could never ride some rides as a kid growing up because I wasn't tall enough. You must be this tall to ride this ride. I thought that was patently unfair. But I also feel that in my industry, it is asinine. If you're a financial planner and you're calling yourself a financial planner, charge for it. And it has no bearing on how much money that person has. If you're putting account minimums in, it's because you want to yank a certain amount of money from that client. And you refuse to work with anyone unless they pay your minimum fee. Well, set that minimum fee. But you shouldn't force them to invest with you. So this person could probably go out and find someone who will charge them, Chris, a flat fee or a reoccurring quarterly fee or an hourly fee, our office, all three of those. But you can pay for someone's advice, listener, and just get an idea. Are there other things you can be looking at that you should be doing? And if that advisor doesn't want to work with you because you're not going to move your money to them, then go find someone else. But this business model that I'm describing to you is growing in popularity and I think is fair. What are your thoughts?
It is, and allows people of really any background and wealth to seek out the advice that they need or want. And it also makes it so that people that happen to have a lot of money aren't penalized. You might think, well, gee, they're not penalized. They're lucky. Well, if you have a lot of money and they're harvesting a traditional financial advisor who has your assets under their management and are charging you a recurring management fee, the more money you have with them, the more you're paying them to go on vacation and do all the things that that advisor does with that money. Where if you just charge, if the planner is charging an hourly or a set flat fee or a quarterly retainer, there's a lot of different models like that. Just because you have a lot of money doesn't mean you're going to be charged extra for things like Social Security advice or taxation advice or whatever other advice that they're dealing with. So I think it's a much fairer, it's a lot more transparent. People know what they're paying. They're not, it's not some mysterious amount that's being carved off of their asset pool every year that they may or may not be paying that much attention to. It's right up front. It's like having a price list and you pick what you want and you proceed with that. I just think for that reason alone, it's a much fairer way of doing it.
And just remember, because he's confusing investment management with financial planning. They are hugely different. And you have the waters get muddied because people who do just investment management, by people I'm talking professionals now, not this gentleman, but a lot of people out there call themselves quote unquote financial planners. And we talk about this on the show all the time, Chris, but they're nothing more than investment advisors. They're not doing financial planning. They're managing assets for a percent of your assets. That's an investment advisor. There's nothing wrong with that. I'm a registered investment advisor, and I'm an investment advisor representative. I'm a little bit of both. I don't want to confuse people on how that works. So I do that. But first and foremost, I'm a financial planner, and so is Chris. We both happen to be certified financial planners, which is we went to an extra level of education and an extra level of steps and testing to kind of set ourselves apart. But we are both financial planners. But we can also be an investment advisor. But first and foremost comes financial planning. And what this person should consider, he's already considering, Chris, in 8 to 10 years reaching out to an investment advisor for help. As a financial planner, and you're a planner too, 8 to 10 years waiting might ruin it for strategies.
Right. The options he has on the table right now.
For financial planning.
Right. Might be gone in 8 to 10 years. And likely will be. There's a lot of the things we can do to truly affect positively the amount of money you get to spend in retirement, which is when it comes down to it, that's the goal.
How much you're going to keep.
How much, it isn't how much an account is worth or how much you grow XYZ. It's how much you actually get to have to spend, the true spendable money. And for you or the people that you leave the money to, that's the goal. And there are different strategies that can be put into place, usually with some type of tax element to them, that the strategy options dwindle greatly once you're past 70 and a half.
And begin to degrade. And that's what I want this person to understand. Don't just wait 8 to 10 years to hire an investment advisor because you recognize your ability or desire to manage your own assets will diminish. Don't waste prime planning years for financial planning. And if Pete was here, he'd be saying, "What? Don't forget about estate planning, Jim." And exactly, you may need to be pulling in an estate plan now as well that can encompass the financial plan. But you have some prime time over the next 8 to 10 years while you're waiting and enjoying retirement and you're waiting to hire an investment advisor, I would hire the financial planner now. I will go so far as to say many people don't need an investment advisor, but most people need a financial planner. Investment advising is being commoditized. The changes in my industry that are occurring right now are mind-numbing. And if you haven't heard the term, quote-unquote, robo-advisor, which someone told me Michael Kitsis is the one who termed, that's essentially what it just is saying is these very smart people are writing computer algorithms now to actually monitor the markets and move portfolios. So a human isn't doing it. And when a human doesn't have to do it, the costs come down. It's the same reason there is a McDonald's in either Illinois or Indiana. I think it was their first trial now of total kiosk ordering. When you go in, they had it on the news. You walk in and you're ordering from these big touch screens. Why? Government is forcing McDonald's and other small well, McDonald's is not a small employer, but other employers that essentially pay the minimum wage. If you're going to start making people pay $12, $15, $20 an hour to flip a burger and to say to somebody, do you want fries with that? We're just going to have computers do it. And now you're starting to see that. And I read an article recently that pretty much all restaurants in the future will, the tabletop itself will have the ordering screen or iPad or whatever the heck it's going to be in there. You're just going to order that way. And you're not going to have all this wait staff. You're going to be able to cut the wait staff by three quarters because you're just pressing and ordering. So what I'm getting at is this is coming in the restaurant industry, but it's already here in my industry. And managing assets is quickly becoming commoditized and the prices are being driven down.
Which is good news for consumers.
It is excellent news. I'm all for this.
Bad news for investment advisors.
Who just do investment advising. Mm-hmm. But you got to seek out people who do financial planning, not an investment advisor who call themselves a financial planner.
Who took a seminar one weekend.
Right, yeah, on financial planning. And, hey, I'm a financial planner now. But really seek out someone whose business model evolves and involves true financial planning. You can tell the BSers from the real ones. If they're talking like Chris and I talk, they're financial planners. So I'm just going to throw that out to all our listeners, not just him. If you're managing your own assets, still do financial planning. Even if you're younger and you're thinking, I don't need an advisor. Goodness, I'm only 35 years old. But you can probably still benefit from a financial planner who might be able to show you some of the tax implications you're going to face in the future, some of the situation or the things you have to consider for your young family, the type of life insurance you may need, type of emergency reserve to hold, if you should refinance your house, if you should lease your next car purchase. These are all things that financial advisors who specialize in millennial generations and younger generations can help with. And you spend your life teaching people financial planning.
Right. And there's obviously a need for that at practically every age. Just the topics are different and the focus is different. I'll put the call out too. There should be a lot more young people in financial planning. There's not enough. You know, we have a lot more finance majors at Colorado State University that are not in financial planning than are in financial planning. It's a small group compared to the rest of the corporate finance, investment finance, you know, real estate, some of these other finance options that are there. But practically any kind of financial advice you need, there are people out there that are creating a niche for themselves, focusing on that, and you can hire them in order to provide you with some advice to guide you in some of these decisions.
Okay, so hopefully that man got a little, probably more than what he bargained for on my answer, but hopefully he begins to understand and all our listeners begin to understand what financial planning is and what investment advising is, and they are two different things. And most people out there calling themselves financial planners are nothing more than investment advisors. And you can tell them one of the surest ways to know if your advisor is just a financial advisor. If he or she is not going to work with you, if you don't have money with them, they're an investment advisor. It's all they are. You've got to seek out people who are willing to work with you without you having to put your money with them. And those people tend to be more on the financial planning side and can look at a lot of things. Okay, so that means the good news is we got through all but one. You're probably saying if you've been keeping track, all but two. No, the one gentleman wrote an email that is going to be end up being the topic, and I've already reached out to him and thanked him for the email. This is actually going to be a series of shows on par with our QLAX. He's writing about QLAX's cousin, Spears. Mm-hmm. And he wanted a whole host of information on single premium immediate annuities. And I've been promising to teach people more about annuities. So we will be doing a whole host of shows on these in the coming weeks. I think people will find it interesting because I'm going to teach you more about single premium immediate annuities than you ever knew or probably care to know. And that leaves just actually one real email that we need to get to. This one came in, though, Chris, on August 11th. So we're by far well within our...
Right, so we can tackle that one next week,
yeah,
is
we
what
can,
you're saying.
We can tackle it next week because we're within our margin of error on replying back to people, which is anywhere from 1 day to 1 year. So we are right. It's a big margin.
That's in the disclaimer on the site, on the website, right?
But we will get to this email, and then we'll get to shows on single premium immediate annuities. Be on the lookout for those. For those who liked our QLAX shows, I know Chris enjoyed three shows dedicated to QLAX. So we're going to do probably at least two, maybe six, shows dedicated to single premium immediate annuities.
I think SPIAs are unfairly treated as the boring annuity in the corner, if you will. You hear so much more in the press and from the insurance folks who, for the most part, sell annuities about other, what seemingly more exciting annuities. And the SPIA is boring, but it does its job very well.
Oh, and when you know how to use it, when you know how it works and how it fits in, it can be a wonderful, not for everyone, but for those where it fits, it can be a wonderful addition to a retirement strategy.
Yep. So thanks again for joining us this week. We'll be back with you next week with another Retirement and IRA show.
You have listened to Jim on the radio, read his quotes in the media, and enjoyed his banter on iTunes. But even now, you may wonder what sets Jim Saulnier and Associates apart from other financial planning companies. The answer is quite simple. Jim's diverse team of professionals specializes in retirement planning. They form a lifelong relationship with you and measure their success not through product sales, but through the security and prosperity you may achieve in your retirement. Jim's entire team shares his unwavering commitment to placing their clients' best interests first while offering their services at fair prices with full disclosures. The professionals at Jim Saulnier & Associates are available to assist you with your retirement planning needs. Visit jimhelps.com to schedule your complimentary coffee and a second opinion meeting. That's Jim, HELPS.com. Or call 970-530-0556.
Like what you just heard? Missed some of today's show? Listen again on iTunes or the Retirement and IRA Show.com.
The Retirement and IRA Show represents the words and views of the show hosts exclusively and should not be construed as investment, legal, or tax advice. All information is believed to be from reliable sources. However, we make no representation as to its completeness or accuracy. All economic and performance information is historical in nature and is not indicative of any future results. Any indices mentioned on the show are unmanaged and cannot be invested in directly. Diversification and asset allocation strategies do not assure profit or protect against loss. Never make any investment or financial decisions based on information offered on this show without first consulting your financial, legal, or tax advisor. Securities offered through Cambridge Investment Research Incorporated, a broker-dealer, member FINRA, SIPC. Advisory services offered through Cambridge Investment Research Advisors Incorporated, a registered investment advisor. Financial planning services offered through Jim Saulnier & Associates, LLC, a registered investment advisor. Jim Saulnier & Associates, LLC, and Cambridge are not affiliated.